Tesla's Badge of Dishonor. This is the Focus Group.
They're all business, except when they're not. It's the Focus Group with Tim Bennett and John Nash.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Focus Group. Tim Bennett here, as always, with my good friend and co-host, Mr. John T. Nash. Be sure to learn all about us at focusgroupradio.com. You'll find our companion podcast there, which is released on Tuesdays, TFG Unbuttoned. And, of course, all of our programming, which is free to you to download, subscribe, like, follow, whatever it is, whatever on your platform of choice. And be sure to check out our partners there, including Deep Discount, which we'll talk about a little later in the broadcast. Mr. Nash, how are you doing? You seem content. You seem sparkly today.
I'm sparkly. I probably had a good weekend of sleep. Also, I think we got the same memo. Today was blue for shirts. Blue
was a blue day.
Yeah, blue day. Also, you know, I got two things that I put down in my my notes to just to chit chat about. First is Meghan Markle seems to have a new show on Netflix. I think it is. Have you heard of this?
No.
It's kind of a lifestyle cooking. She hosts people and she does all this stuff.
Why?
The Guardian, you know, The Guardian's a UK newspaper. Here's one line, one little thing from their review of the new Meghan Markle show. Toe-curling, unlovable TV. Toe-curling, unlovable. Like the Brits, toe-curling, unlovable TV.
Is it on Netflix?
I think it might be Netflix or who I don't know. I came across it the other day. It could have been there. It could have been somewhere else. But the other thing I was going to talk about briefly is watches. Okay, so you know, like for the last, I guess, over a year now, I've been wearing an Apple Watch. And one of the reasons why is because my normal watch, a watch that Bob gave me like 10 years ago, it's a Hamilton automatic.
Yeah.
And automatic in this case means it never has to really be wound. It just sort of winds itself by the movement of your wrist. Well, about, you know, a year and a half ago, this watch started to lose like a minute a day, like 2 minutes or 3 minutes. And, you know, there are times you don't care about a lost minute. But if you're with me and my obsession with precision, this annoyed the crap out of me. So I took it to a store one day, a shop near one of my gyms that claimed to do watch repair. And the guy looks at it, he said, it's going to cost $750 to repair this watch.
No.
And I'm like, the watch isn't even worth that much. That's going to cost me that much to take it apart and figure out what's wrong. I put it on a shelf, ignored it, did the Apple Watch for a while. About 2 weeks ago, I'm leaving the apartment in a rush. I grab my watch, I leave, and I realize the watch battery is dead. Now, I guess in some ways, no one, like if you're a Gen Z, you wouldn't care because most people get their time off their phone these days. But I happen to like a wristwatch. I think that just serves a great purpose. I was so pissed off at this that I later in the day, I had a class and the instructor is a watch collector, a French guy, really great. I mentioned my frustration at this automatic watch not being repairable, whatever, you know. He just makes his face. He goes, no. You got to go to Chen's Watch down in Chinatown on Mott Street. He'll do it. He'll fix it. I said, well, are we talking $750? No. Probably $70-$80, maybe. He'll know what to do. You take it to Chen's Watch. So this is why I love living in New York City. So one day I decide I'm going to take it down. Tim and I finished some work we were doing. I get on the train. 15 minutes later, I'm in Chinatown. And I go into Chen's Watch. And Chen's Watch is really like a storefront that has two watch display cases. And you know those plastic strips they hang like through the Costco freezer? To
between the freezer,
section?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep the air out. Yeah.
So you go through that and I'm the only guy in the store and there's this guy behind the counter. I said, are you Chen? He goes, Like maybe there's a Chen. Maybe there's
sometimes Bill.
Yeah, I hand him the watch and I said, look, it stopped keeping accurate time about a year ago and it just stopped running, period. So he starts, and while I am talking, he flips it over onto this little velvet mat and he takes out these really tiny screwdrivers and he starts taking the back off and he lifts it off and then he picks it up and he starts playing with this.
Have one of those telescope.
He had the loop that he put over his eye and he starts looking at it. And there's this thing that the back has clear glass. You could see the mechanism. And there's this thing that moves back, a rocker that moves back and forth. And he says very quickly, no, this watch is in great shape. The automatic movement is capable of winding it. He goes, something else is wrong. I said, do you think I've overwound the watch? You can't overwind this watch. Here's what happened. And he starts doing this pantomime about, he goes, you start winding that watch and power, 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 power. And he starts like blowing up. He goes, where does all this power go? And he's staring like it's a school quiz. And I said, the mainspring? Mainspring. Mainspring's busted. That's what I think. I said, are you sure? Yeah, you can't overwind it. I said, so there's a mechanism that prevents overwinding? Yes. Then he looks like right at me, yes. And I said, so he can't overwind it. He said, mainspring, probably a manufacturing defect. I said, but I've had the watch for like 14 or 15 years. He goes, it shows up sometimes late in the watch's life. And he takes a little plastic bag out and he takes a Sharpie and he goes, phone number, phone number.
Didn't so even ask him, you whether you wanted to fix it or not. Just
no,
assume.
I give him the cell phone number. He drops the watch in the bag and he writes 85 on it with a dollar sign. And I look at him and I said, you're really sure it's going to be? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, it's going to take me a long time. It will be ready Thursday morning. Now, this is a Monday afternoon. I laughed and I said, you can have the watch as long as you want, right? So 2 days go by. Wednesday, Tim and I are on the phone. We're talking about something business-wise. And I get a text message from Chen. And it says, Chen's watch here. Your watch is ready to be picked up. We are closed on Tuesdays.
No name?
No name. No.
Well, you didn't ask your name, right? Just had your phone number.
No, just my phone number.
No need for your name. Just need a number.
I finish up with Tim and I'm like, gosh darn it, it's Wednesday. I could pick up my watch. So I go down again. I retrace my steps to Chinatown. I go in through the meat curtain. This time there's a bunch of people in the store shopping for watches. And there's no Chen. There's this woman behind the counter. And I said to her, I'm here to pick up a watch. Repair? I said, yeah. She goes, last four digits of number. I don't mean to be, you know.
It's like the dry cleaner.
Yeah. And so I gave her that. She pulls a, she takes a box out, takes a bag out. And I had also asked him to put a new band that I'd bought on actually it's this thing here. So that's the watch repaired.
Well, you got a new band too, huh?
I got a new band off Amazon for like $20. And so the thing was running to the second. I mean, it matched my cell phone time perfectly.
Wow.
And on the bag was written mainspring and like in a smaller Sharpie. And so I started to ask her questions, but she wasn't the one who repaired it. And she said, it's going to run fine now. You're set, 85. And I put this thing on and I walked out and I was the happiest camper in the world because now I don't have to charge the watch. It doesn't beep or chirp at me. Anyway.
I can see you. Probably upset people were there. You wanted to chat with Chen because you'd like to chat. You would have heard all about the spring and all the useless things like when we asked.
You know me so well.
Neon Sign Museum when it was 110 degrees in the sun and you asked where they got the light bulbs from. We could have all killed you.
That was a big answer. Or in front of the with the Bacardi factory.
Yeah. Is this the Bacardi that does rum? Oh, my God. I thought the crowd was going to kill you. They all came up to me.
I did want to talk to Chen. You're right, though. I did want to get some more detail. But look, $85 and the watch is running perfectly. And in fact, he made it sound like it may never need to be repaired again. You know, like, and then Bob and I thought about it. And, you know, I love a mechanical watch. It does what it's supposed to do, right? It watches tell time. And I have friends who've had their Apple Watch record cardio problems, all sorts of great things, right? But you got to charge it.
Well, don't you have to hit a button? It doesn't display the time the whole time, does it?
Yeah, it can. It can. I had mine set up to look like a watch, which is sort of.
Does that chew up the battery?
Yeah, I got about a day and a half out of the watch before I would go to red, charge the watch now. Mm. I'm thrilled, though. Just the movement of this thing's ticking away. So there are my two things. The Meghan Markle review from The Guardian and John's watch gets repaired in Chinatown.
Well, the Meghan Markle thing, she and Harry are just, I've said this a million times. They had the best gig in the world. They had all the benefit with none of the responsibility, and why they screwed it up. I'd have been happy as to be living over in Frogmore in Windsor, hanging out and driving my car around.
A little Frogmore. Yeah, I know. Frogmore cottage.
I mean, what, anyway, I don't get it. And so, why is she doing a Netflix show? For God's sakes. I don't know. I tried, you know what? Speaking of that, there's on YouTube, there's The Royal Chef. And he was the cook in Kensington for Princess Di and the kids when they were little. So he was making their favorite meals. So I tried to make one of the favorite meals one night. It was a disaster. It was this, I would have done better opening like a can of Chef Boyardee, but essentially it was these noodles in beef. And when I read the ingredients, I thought they just sounded off, but I'm like, well, the kids love it. And they said Prince William has this at least once a week still. It's some sort of beef and tomato sauce, but they put a lot of Worcestershire in it and something else. And I made it, and Richard and I both kind of made a face. Maybe it's an acquired taste.
Acquired taste, yeah.
But or I did something wrong, but I followed a couple of these. You can follow these royal chefs' recipes, and just for something different to do to see whether you liked them or not. Have you ever done that?
No. Bob has tried to make, and I think that you did too, the Queen's cake.
The Queen's cake, right? Which isn't baked.
No, it's a chocolate cake of some sort that she would actually travel with.
Yes. Like
she always had a piece every day before going to bed, which I
right,
love.
Right, piece every day. And they said she had great joy in finishing the last piece every time. Mm-hmm. And they said it was the same cake that, again, William used at his wedding, that he had at his
wedding.
Wow. Okay. But it's essentially, you take those, of course, I'm going to forget the name, McVites or whatever, M-C-V-I-T-E-S, yep. The biscuits.
McVities, yeah.
Is that what they are? And then you crunch them up.
Yeah.
And you use this chocolate and you mix it and... I made it for you guys once. It was okay.
It was okay. We tasted it, you said you weren't sure you had nailed the thing precisely. But
well, and I'm sure it's like the Queen's favorite drink, and she's the only one allowed to drink it, which was Dubonnet, gin, and lemon with a cube. Ice cubes, you know, the Brits still don't know refrigeration. And that's something you should tariff about. Get ice cubes. But But I've tried to make that drink. You know, we've joked, people that were Anglophiles or whatever love the British, and I've tried to make the drink, and I don't think it's drinkable. Have you tried it?
No, I haven't, no.
It's a Dubonnet, which is like a wine aperitif,
So
and
sweet.
Gin. But she had one every day, right before lunch, supposedly.
I have difficulty with the Pimm's cup.
Yeah, I haven't had them in a long time. So anyway, Mr. Nash, without... further ado, what caught your eye this week, besides Chen's watch?
What caught your eye? Here's what Tim and John found.
Chen's Watch Inc. definitely caught my eye down in Chinatown. Okay, I'm going to read a lot of this article, or at least some of it, because it freaked me out when I came across this. And you'll know why when I put this up. So the headline read, Surgeon...
Yeah. I saw... John,
Did
saw
you
the
see
same...
This?
And I thought it... Okay, and I didn't use it because of probably the same uneasiness you had with it.
Surgeons implant teeth in patients' eyes to restore vision. I didn't even know what to think of this. And so I started reading the article, and it's what I thought. It's about the body's desire to reject a foreign thing. Like, so transplants, people that have transplant surgeries deal with this. A trio of Canadians are on track to become the country's first residents to have their eyesight restored, thanks in part to their teeth. A procedure known as, there's a complicated name I'm going to butcher, so I'll just simply say the procedure is known as tooth-in-eye surgery. It involves harvesting the body's strongest natural substance to craft a specialized lens implant for patients with severe corneal blindness from conjunctival scarring. So it's a very specific type of blindness, meaning it probably could be reversed because there's some scarring that happened. Tooth and eye surgery remains a comparatively rare procedure, even 60 years after its development, but advocates hope the newest success stories can help popularize the treatment. So it's pioneered by an Italian ophthalmologist named Benedetto Strampelli in the early 60s. It's intended to minimize the risk of a patient rejecting a foreign implant, as I mentioned before. Surgeons first extract a tooth, usually one of the person's canine teeth, you know, the pointy ones. Then they shave it down to form a rectangular layer called a longitudinal lamina that includes a hole drilled in the center. So I'm reading this, and there's a picture, if you're watching on YouTube, there's someone's eye that has one of these things. And I'm like, ugh. Once the frame is finished, doctors install a tiny plastic telescopic lens into the dentine, which is the tooth part, case, before temporarily sewing the implant into the side of a patient's cheek. where it remains for a few months as new tissue grows around it. Ooh. I don't even know how you think of these things. Another surgery removes the scar tissue from the patient's eye and replaces it with healthy tissue also harvested from the cheek. In a final procedure, doctors sew the implant into the eye socket under the cheek tissue transplant, where the lens helps partially restore sight. Previous surveys indicate many patients' vision improves enough to allow them to drive a car. Okay, so it's only applicable in certain instances of severe corneal blindness where trauma and damage caused the problem. There's risks, of course, but I'll just stop there and say, oh my God, right?
Well, why the tooth, I guess? I don't know. Could because you do another bone of
it's
the body?
A heart, it's one of the... I would have thought a bone might have done this, but apparently teeth are the most durable thing in the body that's a hard surface. I mean, think of what our teeth do, right? And I'm just blown away that a doctor figured this technique out, right? And has successfully done it to the point where people can drive a car. I mean, that's like amazing. That means they could probably do other things too, right?
I'm surprised, though. I guess they obviously know far more about it than I do, but when I've had root canals or I've had implants on my teeth, they put in cadaver bone to help build up.
Correct.
Help build up the jaw or whatever. And so I'm wondering if this, but I guess you don't want your body to reject it. So that's what this is about.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's more likely to reject in this area than in your jaw or something. Yeah, I don't know. I saw the story too, and I was kind of, and I thought, is that the picture you're showing here in the video with the red eye, is that the tooth?
That's the
part of the tooth?
The tooth that's been formed and shaved and with the little hole in the middle for the telescopic lens, as in almost looks like a weird kind of android contact lens or something.
Well, I was going to say, are they going to keep it red with the black dot? I mean, why not make it white or something? I don't know.
Tim, there are more questions than answers, and this caught my eye, right?
Damn Canadians.
but really, like, well, it's the Italians who invented the procedure. The Canadian doctors are doing this. We'll have to tariff this, by the way.
Yeah, it's a tariff. It's an expensive eye.
But so you probably saw it and were like, oh, I'll let John do that one.
Well, I moved on because, first of all, it was a little bit too scientific for me. And I thought, well, I saw the picture of the eye.
Yeah.
So, of course, I picked something so totally different and unscientific, and this one caught my eye because I had no idea that Hunter Biden was an artist. Did you know he was an artist?
Yeah, sure. There's a whole big...
How did I miss this?
I'm surprised because the Republicans went crazy when he had a gallery show. Where's the money going? He's not a bad artist either, by the way.
So I'm shocked, but he's a starving artist now.
Now he is,
So they said that since his dad left the White House... no one's buying his artwork anymore. And he's also lost his house. He was living in Malibu, but because of the fires in L.A., he's also lost his house. And a number of the paintings were also in that house that burned down in Malibu. So he's lost the artwork. But he also doesn't have people. Since he said his dad has left office, his artwork has dried up. And he can't figure out why. He also did a memoir. And that only sold 3,100 copies. He thought he might do better with that as well. But they're saying since his father left the office, I don't believe it's because his father left office, but that's what he's saying. So he's 55 years old. His catalog is mostly colorful abstracts, they said. Some people compared it to hotel art. He made nearly $1.5 million in selling these pieces when his dad was in office, although they would never say who was buying them. Which is where the Republicans were very skeptical. We're skeptics of this.
They're skeptical about anything that doesn't do with them.
Right. They said he sold, prior to December 2023, he sold 27 pieces of art for an average price of $54,481. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Since then, he's only sold one piece this year for $36,000. I still think that's high. I don't know. I've seen the pieces of art. Would you spend $54,000 for a Hunter Biden?
I wouldn't. When we used to buy art back in the day, like contemporary, like pop art or modern art, like our threshold was $1,500. You know, well,
that's
that
high
was
for
high.
Me still. Yeah. His memoir, which came out in 2021, Beautiful Things, sales have plunged there as well, as I said. Since 2023, or in the last 6 months, he's only sold He sold 3,200 copies up until 2023. Since then, he's only sold 1,100 copies. I'm not so sure what his memoir would be about. He's also now stopped a lawsuit. So he was going to sue this Republican because, and the computer store that got his computer and hacked
the
his
laptop,
information.
The
and
then, infamous right, laptop. Yeah.
And then posted his personal pictures and letters or emails and so forth. But he says right now that he's dropping all the lawsuits because he doesn't have the money to fight them. And he just wants it to move on. Of course, his father had pardoned him for a number of things in a sweeping pardon, but he just wants to move on with his life. And so he's dropping all the lawsuits he has against the Republicans. He hopes they do the same if there's still any out there. And would like to get back on track with his artwork or figure something else out. So I don't know. The artwork I was trying to figure out, they were showing him actually drawing. I didn't know if it was computer generated or it's actual
art.
No,
he works in traditional media because there was a... Okay. You had sent me a picture that I had difficulty opening because of the way the internet saved the file. So I found the internets. I found this other Hunter Biden picture. But then the New York Times from 2023 or 22 when he had a gallery show or something.
Right.
They had him sitting in front of a canvas with other artworks around him. And it looked like it was either watercolor or oil. But I think he works in traditional media.
Yeah. I just think $54,000 is quite the price.
Well, were museums lining up for this?
Well, that's where they're saying they can't quite figure out who's buying the stuff. And that's where they thought there was something nefarious going on with the governments, let alone the fact that we're letting the Secret Service stay at $1,000 a night Mar-a-Lago type clubs and that are owned by the president or any of that.
Let alone that Trump's golf weekends cost $18.2 million a weekend. And we have Elon Musk running around looking for waste.
Which drives me crazy here because a lot of the Trumper jackasses here in Delaware were bitching and moaning about when the Biden would come in. And they came in 9 times in 4 years.
By car
or helicopter, which is, a short jump from D.C. Did not cost millions of dollars. I mean, he's dragging that 747 back and forth to Mar-a-Lago every week, loaded with people and cars and limos and all the other nonsense. I have friends who live down there that are frustrated because they said, don't try to fly out of that area on a Sunday if you want to get back east to go to work, because he constantly is changing when he's leaving and the airspace is closed.
And they got
to
close the space,
So
anyway.
We digress. Yeah. So as many of you know, Deep Discount's a partner of ours here on the Focus Group, and they've got a spring site-wide sale going on right now, which means everything is on sale. So there's all kinds of things you could find there. And so leaves you wide open to start shopping and pick some items either to add to your library and or I always like to say buy them and give them away as gifts. So, Mr. Nash, what did you pick this week?
This has been a long time in coming. And our friend at Deep Discount, Lauren, knew this was a big interest of mine. I always thought Criterion was going to put this out because it really demands a Criterion.
Oh, I know what it is. Can I guess?
Go ahead.
Amadeus.
Yes, perfect. So Warner Brothers, the studio that originally released Amadeus years ago, has done a 4K Ultra HD release with digital copy included. It is the theatrical release of Amadeus. This is the one you saw in the movie theaters. This is the one that won the Academy Awards. It's one of my favorite films of all time. I love it. And the only disc you could get at Blu-ray level for Amadeus prior to this was the director's cut. And they added like 20 extra minutes of what I thought was not great stuff. And Milos Forman, the director, was like, no, the film he directed and edited and we saw in the theaters was the way it should be. I ordered this the other day, the minute it came out, and a Deep Discount had it at a great price, $23.99. So it's 4K Ultra HD with a digital copy. I can't wait to walk up to the TV and see what the costumes look like. The sound's going to be great. So they went and they remastered the master negative and the soundtrack. So my pick was Amadeus in 4K Ultra HD.
It was funny because I saw that pop up and I thought, oh, John.
Good guess, Tim. Good guess. Yes.
I picked something that has for some reason popped into my feed a number of times. And it's called Night and Day, which was originally released in 1946. And it's a biopic about Cole Porter. And they said he was one of the most sophisticated men and names of the 20th century for songwriting. And Cary Grant plays him as kind of the debonair Cole Porter. And also Jane Wyman's in the movie, as well as Eve Arden.
And Monty Woolley. Now,
and Monty Woolley, yeah.
Do you know Monty Woolley at all?
He
appeared in a bunch of movies at this time. And he was a radio personality and an actor. But anyway, Cary Grant must play Cole Porter, right?
Yes. And Alexis Smith is his love interest. So I've seen clips of it and I find it enjoyable. And so, that's another thing, no surprise, I haven't seen. So, Night and Day, it's on DVD and, you can get it for under $15. So I thought it just looked to me like a fun romp and a fun biopic. It's also colorized.
Okay. So it was black and white because it came out in 46, I think.
46,
right.
Right. Came out in 1946. So, And the new release, or the release of this, came out in 2018.
I say yes to anything with Cary Grant. So you're already down the road with me on this one. We do have a new release this week. It's from the Criterion Collection, the gold standard, we like to call it. It's called Thief. And this is a movie I've heard about. I think it came out in 1981, was it?
The Thief, yes, 1981.
Yeah, I think it's 81. And it stars James Caan. And it's this debut, Michael Mann, directed and scripted this intelligent actioner starring James Caan as Frank, a safecracker specializing in diamond heists. Dreaming of retiring and leading a normal life, Frank begins a romance with a wonderful soul, Tuesday Weld, another great actress, but agrees to take one final job pulling off a huge score. When things go south, he becomes the target of gangsters led by a ruthless mob boss played by Robert Prosky. James Belushi's in the movie, and Willie Nelson also stars. So it's based on a memoir by burglar John Siebold, a.k.a. Violent Streets. Interesting to me. It's a little over 2 hours, 123 minutes. But it's one of these. So when Criterion picks a movie, they do it for a reason. So it must be because this is a great directorial debut. It was also written by the director. James Caan probably turns in a great performance. So it's called Thief, and it's $34.99, and it comes to you from the Criterion Collection. So reviewing, folks, we have a spring sale going on at Deep Discount. It's one of our favorites because Tim and I get to roam the site then. I picked a movie that Tim guessed right off the bat. I've been dying for this thing to come out, cleaned up, sparkling like new theatrical cut, Amadeus, 4K Ultra HD with digital copy, $23.99. Night and Day, Tim picked, and it's about Cole Porter, and it stars Cary Grant and Alexis Smith, and there's a Monty Woolley's in there. If you know movies, you'll know Monty Woolley. And the new release this week is Thief from the Criterion Collection, starring James Caan. You get that for $34.99. We are going to take, and by the way, you get the Deep Discount by going to focusgroupradio.com and clicking on the Deep Discount logo. I needed to say that, but I was obsessed with Amadeus. So we're going to take a really quick break. And when we get back, we have a business birthday. We're going to visit with a new partner of ours here on the show, Mando. And we have a shop talk, which Tim teased at the beginning of the show. So we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Focus Group with Tim and John. Learn more at focusgroupradio.com. Now back to The Focus Group with Tim and John. Available pretty much everywhere.
Everybody, welcome back to The Focus Group. Tim Bennett here with my good friend and co-host, Mr. John T. Nash. Without further ado, a signature of our program, the business birthday.
Everyone does celebrity birthday greetings, but The Focus Group is the only show in the universe that celebrates business birthdays.
So born today, March 12th in 1838, a long time ago. Sir Henry William Perkin.
Love
this one. He died at 69 in 07. Did you know him at all?
No, and this is why the business birthday is so cool, because you often learn about new products, new things that never would have existed if someone didn't do it. And this is one of them, right?
Right, and this could be the Jeopardy question of, who invented purple? I mean, it's essentially essentially it. Sir William Henry Perkin. And if you're watching the video, you'll see a number of purple or mauve, or as they originally called the color purple, mauvienne. Mauvienne. So Perkins was a chemist, and he also worked in the medical field. He grew up in London, and was trying to find a cure for malaria. And they were using quinine. I always say quinine, but quinine.
That's right. Yeah.
And they were trying to synthesize it, and they were going to come up with a cure for malaria. And he was only 18 years old at the time, and he was kind of interning and doing this synthetic organic chemistry. And as he was cleaning out one of his beakers, something bumped into something or other in the cloth and gave this very, very deep purple hue of color. And he tried it again, and then dumped some on some silk and saw that it adhered to it. And he thought, oh my God, I have found this synthetic dye for purple, because prior to this, everybody just used foods or roots or, you know, cinnamon, and the colors that were used at the time weren't vibrant. They didn't hold their color well. They also broke down a lot. And so he did a swath of this purple, and essentially changed the fashion world. They said the medical world and also chemistry, because he was able to take the same process and make other colors. Eventually he opened his own synthetic dye company.
Oh, I didn't know. So it did lead to a rainbow, not just the one color.
Yeah, it led to, he then experimented with reds and greens. Purple, I found out, and I didn't know this, is the most difficult color to produce, particularly when they use natural products. But also from the synthetic, it was the most expensive color to make, which is why royalty loved it so. Because it was hard and it was expensive to get. So what ended up happening when he came out with this purple, all of a sudden, Princess, let me get it right. It was Victoria and Queen Victoria and Empress Eugenie went crazy and got all these products done in purple, which we know as, if you watch or see any of the royal family, The Crown, any of the trappings of the royal family in that purple, that was the original color that they used. And but they went into a fashion frenzy, and then it became very accessible to people all over the world. And they said, they called it a purple measles, because all these women in the late 1800s then were wearing all of these purple clothing now, because they could get this synthetic dye. And it was far more affordable than if they did it through the natural process. So he really changed fashion, and he discovered quite by accident this new synthetic dye while he was trying to find a cure for malaria. They said it became so popular they were calling it mauve measles. That's what it was. And so that was his claim to fame. He won all kinds of honors. Of course, the royal family was very much in tune to what he was doing. And it's funny, there's some pictures there of all the purple is still kind of the key color for royalty. One of the unintended consequences as well was that a lot of the laborers in these dye factories were later found to have increased risk of bladder cancer.
Not surprising. And also, did it absorb through the skin somehow, right?
Yeah, and also all kinds of other carcinoma issues. So they said by the 1950s, the synthetic dye industry also then had to reboot and figure out. And they said they helped transform medicine, because they then, because all these workers were getting cancer, helped with the development of cancer treatments. So they used a lot of these workers that had got these cancers from the synthetic dyes to help try to find a cure and to help with cancer treatment. So that's how this whole experiment ended up from just going from malaria to not only changed fashion, but into the medical and chemical realm as well. So happy birthday to William Perkin.
I think it's a brilliant one, because we just assume these things existed, right? Like the ancients used to use, as you said, berries and minerals to create dyes. But they could only get certain colors, and some ones were really hard to do, and some didn't last very long because of the nature of the organic dye. So fascinating stuff.
Yeah, after the purple, he did red, which was another difficult one and
hard
expensive.
One. Yeah.
And then he did a green yellow. But so his, you know, aha moment came of, well, forget being a chemist, where I'm going to make these synthetic dyes.
So, I'm going to make colors.
Colors. So, hey, as John mentioned right before the break, we have a new partner we'd like to share with you. It's Mando, and it is, I like to say, or I like to call it, the 72-hour deodorant protection. That's what I like it for, because I, particularly me, when I get nervous sometimes, or you sweat, or you're moving around a lot, and you're traveling, and you need to have full coverage, as I like to say, I need a deodorant that works. And so when Mando joined us, John and I have been using it for about 2 months, and we came up with an idea. We thought, how are we going to talk about this differently than other people? And many know that we've talked about the four P's of marketing, which are product, price, place, and promotion. But we came up with the four P's of freshness, which we use for Mando, and which was protection, placement, perfume, and price. And we love it because if you want to take care of your pits or your packages or your privates or your feet, this is an all-in-one solution with the folks at Mando. And I know you've been using it yourself, John. So what did you like about the products?
So, Tim, I had to think about this because I've only changed my deodorant twice in my life, if you could believe it. The first time was thanks to you when we got out of college. You turned me on to the brand that we'd used from that day forward to the pandemic. Think about this, right? And the second time I changed a deodorant was when you tried a new one after we couldn't get our old one. And okay with all of that. But so I guess it's my fancy way of saying habits are hard to change when it comes to personal grooming. I'm no different from anybody else. So when the Mando package arrived, I first used the stick deodorant. And I started really enjoying that. It truly does give you 72 hours of protection. I'm going to sweat. I don't mind sweating, but I do mind if I sweat and smell. So the stick deodorant was my first thing. Then I started using the deodorant cream. And this was a game changer for me. And this is what I mean about like unlearning your habits and learning a new one. You put a pea-sized drop of this lotion under each arm, like in a dry armpit. 72 hours protection. And it's amazing. It's just a different way of using deodorant. And it just, so between the stick and the cream, I'm thrilled. And then there's these deodorant wipes as well, which I tend to use at the gym sometimes if I don't feel like taking a shower and don't feel like, I don't mean to gross anybody out, but you know, sometimes you do a strength workout and you're not really sweaty, but you want to just be fresh. So that's, you throw those deodorant wipes in your bag. So Tim, on the P, so that, I guess that would be performance and placement. How about P for price?
For P for price. So if there's, we recommend the starter pack, and the starter pack is, you actually get four products. And right now, if you go to shopmando, shopmando.com, and at checkout, or select the starter pack, you get a solid stick deodorant. My new favorite flavor, I got Mount Fuji, which I like in that. And then you get a choice of either a spray or a cream tube deodorant. And I got bourbon leather, and I really am starting to like that now.
That sounds so you, by the way.
I know, it's great. And you get one of those. And I actually did try it all the other places, John, down in the VIP region. And so we'll see.
You're daring. Okay.
I haven't done the sniff test yet, but we'll see. And then you get to select two other products, and we recommend the body wash, or as John mentioned, these cloth wipes for quick touch up. And but at checkout, if you type in the word focus, as a focus group listener, focus, F-O-C-U-S, you'll get $5 off plus free shipping. And as John mentioned, right up until the pandemic, I'm shocked about how expensive men's grooming products and deodorants have been. So after we got this starter pack, I said to John, there's no way you could buy, I think it comes to $30. I said, there's no way you'd be able to buy all this for $30. So it's a great deal, and if you want to give some as gifts or try it yourself, be sure to go to shopmando.com. Use the code FOCUS at checkout.
There you go, and I'll just repeat it myself. It's shopmando.com. 40% off the starter pack. I think it's a great deal, and just use the code FOCUS, F-O-C-U-S, when you're checking out. Just think of Tim and John. Focus will come naturally to you. So there you go. Thank you.
Smell like us.
Smell like us, or don't smell like, well, depending on how you look at it, right?
So, hey, on our, we've got a quick shop talk here today, and I had posted some of these pictures over on our Facebook page, which is Focus Group Radio, and the headline is Nervous Tesla Owners Start Rebranding Their Cars. And as many of you know, Elon Musk has been heavy-handed within our current administration with his Doge group, and has not been well-received, not only in the U.S. by a lot of people, but also globally. And it's really affected his business. I saw something over the weekend where it said that Tesla stock is down 45%. In Germany, sales are off 70%. Number of countries, the products are just tanking. People are protesting in front of dealerships. Unfortunately, people are also vandalizing Tesla products, which is not, you should not do that. I mean, I think
it's someone's property, right?
Somebody's property. But what owners are doing, or what people are doing, is they're rebadging their products. And I laugh because some of these, particularly Mazda, seems to be the popular one because they said the Tesla looks like some of the Mazda sedans. Uh-huh. But people are putting the Mazda badge on the back. They're doing the Audi badge.
Tim, where do they get the badges from?
So you can buy them. You can buy them
like
at a
third. Is this like a off market or like, well, how do you do this?
Yeah, or you could probably go to an auto parts, you know, an AutoZone or Pep Boys or something like that, or order. You know, you can get anything online now, so you can go online. And there's also, what was it that I saw? There were bumper stickers that people are putting on their Tesla products now. It says, "I bought this car before I knew Elon was crazy." And there was one Cybertruck, which is pictured here if you go on to our, if you're listening or watching us on video, with they put Toyota along the back, which I thought was funny. But what the bigger discussion here for me, what I was going to ask you about is as people are doing this, it is there's so much money that it takes to develop a brand. And actually, he did have a pretty hot brand in that he was the leader in these electric cars. They were viewed as luxury cars.
Huge and technology jump, yeah.
Right, he had all of these charging stations, which are still all over the country, far more than other charging stations. But he has totally kind of tarnished his brand in the last 6 weeks or so. Will he? Do you think he'll? How do you fix it? Do you get it back? I mean, he seems to be imploding. So, do you get it back, or what do you do? Because you can't sustain. It can't sustain losses month after month after month.
So as Tim rightly points out, a brand could take multi-million dollars and years to get to a point where it has the kind of brand name penetration that Tesla had. And Tesla was right up there with SpaceX and Elon Musk as being brilliant businessman. He's going to solve this problem. And this is not knocking electric vehicles. I think the Tesla still is one of the finest you can buy. Obviously, there's competition on the market. But because of his alignment and his mucking around with European elections in Germany and England, and of course his cleaving to Donald Trump, and now he's the head of Doge. Yeah. I still laugh at the Department of Government Efficiency. He'll let the $18 million golf weekends at Mar-a-Lago go.
Right.
But if you're an employee who's been dutifully doing your job helping citizens, you're out the door. That's exactly what's causing this problem. And the interesting thing about Tesla is the market for his vehicles are the very people that do not like his political views or his policies or what he did to Twitter. So if I were a manufacturer of an electric vehicle, if I were any of the other brands who had a car coming to market that could do what a Tesla did, I would be right on top of that. And this is a foreseeable problem that he could have avoided by not being this way. Instead, he's driven right into the fan and the blades are spinning. And within, Tim, the article said it was 6 days to 6 weeks, multi-years and billions of investment were shredded. Because if you intended to buy a Tesla, let's say I hate to use the phrases that the right wing uses, but you're liberal or whatever, and you want to improve the environment. You know that you have a driving habit that will allow electric to be a perfect fit for you. You could charge the car, use it for a few days, do your errands. It's like, are you going to buy a Tesla at this point? You know, I would say if you're not a fan of his and you don't want to put money in his pocket, I mean, and sales are cratering, not just in the U.S., but you said Germany
globally,
and Europe as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And Canada's putting 100% tariff on the cars coming from the U.S.
100%.
That's
so
what
if
they
a car
said.
Costs 20,000.
So if it costs 100, it's going to be 200,000 in Canada. Mm-hmm. The Teslas. I I don't. It's self-inflicted, and I was even shocked. I think you and I talked about it offline at the kind of the mock State of the Union, because it wasn't really a State of the Union because he'd only been in office a few weeks. But last week when he did the State of the Union and totally was berating the EV market, and I'm going to get rid of the EV mandates, and I'm going to get rid of all the charging infrastructure that the Biden administration was going to support.
Bills? Yeah.
But then he, and let me introduce you to Elon Musk, the king of EVs. Right. So, I mean, it makes no, did anyone see the iron? I don't know, the hypocrisy and the irony
we
and
did.
All the other
we
things.
We did. Right. Yeah.
But I just thought if you were a Tesla dealer, or you're selling the Tesla product, or you're one of these places that have set up these EV charging stations, which people say are getting damaged now, it's kind of what he did with Twitter, right? He totally blew Twitter up.
So
and
Tim,
then he blows up
the,
Tesla. Now he's blowing up our government.
Guess so, what the top financial analysts now peg the value of Twitter at?
I couldn't even guess.
$12.5 billion. He bought it for what? $44 billion. He's effectively erased almost $30 billion of value in a matter of a year and a half or whatever it was. I just think from a marketing point of view, the world that Tim and I occupy with marketing and branding, this would be crisis level. All the red lights should be flashing and the board should be demanding something. Maybe he step away from the, you know what I mean? Like you have dealers who can't move product. They just released a new car the other day that supposedly, I think it has pre-orders.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I don't know what you do with somebody like him, because you're exactly right. He either steps down. I mean, think about years and years ago, the Pinto. Remember? If I said Pinto to you now, you wouldn't drive one. And you would say, if somebody rear ends me, it's gonna explode.
Blows up. Right.
Right. Which totally tarnished the brand, totally tarnished Ford. And I would say if people are actually going out of their way to disguise their cars that they bought to look like something else, so it's no longer a badge of honor to have a Tesla. You're making it look like an Audi or a Honda.
I was fooled by these pictures, by the way.
Oh, I was too, particularly the Audi.
And the Audi, all of them.
They all look real.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the Toyota on the back of the Cybertruck was just kind of hilarious.
Now, the Cybertruck is a stupid buy. I can't imagine anybody buying that thing.
Have you seen
one? I see them on the roads. I see them on the roads and I laugh. They're too big. They don't fit in parking spots. They're horrible in the snow. I don't get it. But that's just, look at me. The car is another thing. I think the Tesla EV cars were
They're good looking and
revolutionary. Mm-hmm. The truck is more look at me. It's like a Hummer, right? It was fun for it. Then you feel like
fun
you're driving
for a minute.
Right, and then you feel like you're driving a milk truck.
Here's a sidebar on the Cybertruck. We have one that parks in our neighborhood, and Bob was going, and this tells you where the brand is at, in my opinion. Bob's going to the train one morning, and he's walking by the Cybertruck, which is illegally parked, and there's a guy standing by the Cybertruck with his cell phone reading the license plate to someone probably at the city to give. And Bob snickers, and the guy looks at him. He goes, "I do this every day. This guy parks illegally, and he's got a ton of tickets already." And
they don't boot it like they booted my car
thing. He just
why don't they boot it?
I don't know. I haven't seen the boot used too often. They've switched now, Tim. They have this plastic sheet that goes over that blocks your view on the windshield, and it sticks to the windshield. You can't get it off. The only way to get it off is to break the windshield or have the cop come and take it off. More effective than the boot, I think. But here you had, so my suspicion is that this guy would not call in a car that was illegally parked any other day of the week, but it was the Cybertruck. It was ugly and it was made by Elon Musk. So I'm going to call it in.
You know, when I got that,
go ahead.
No, it tells you all you need to know. I was going to say, when I got that boot in Manhattan, there's a whole little cottage industry as I'm waiting for them to come stick the frigging thing off. These guys pulling up on their bikes with a toolbox. I'll take it off for you for $50. Take it off for you for $100.
Tim, I got to tell you something. Bob had a procedure recently. We're at the hospital, and I was talking to a nurse who drives to and from the hospital. I mentioned the time that you got a boot because she brought it up. And then she immediately said, "Did someone come around and offer to take it off?" And I said, "As a matter of fact, they did." "Well, did he do a head?" Because he could have avoided the whole thing. Her recommendation was you should have used the gypsies or whatever they were.
Well, if I knew I was never coming in Manhattan again, because I figured they write the ticket, right?
The plate. So they got the plate.
So they leave the boot. So the kid takes the boot off, give him $50, $100. They leave the boot on the side of the road. Nobody wants the boot. But then I'm sure New York State, and I'm thinking they probably have a reciprocal agreement with Pennsylvania. But I thought if I was never going to go again, I probably would have rolled the dice on take the boot off.
I just think of you as an AbFab character. Is this the car clamp club? The car clamp club. Remember they downsize and they have to drive and they go to Harvey Nicks and the car gets booted. And is this the car clamp club?
That was the biggest waste of lunch. That was when we were told we weren't going to fly to South Africa.
Yes, Tim, I remember that day. We spent extra time on the
Don't even start.
Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play? All right, friends, we're going to call it a show there. We want to thank all of you for joining us here on the Focus Group. I want to remind you that our website is focusgroupradio.com. You could click on that. You could check out our partner, Deep Discount. They have a site-wide spring sale going, one of our favorites. I picked the movie Amadeus. Hallelujah. It is in 4K Ultra HD, restored. It looks great. Pick it up if you're a fan. Tim picked Night and Day, a movie starring Cary Grant about Cole Porter. And the pick of the week this week, or the new release, is Thief from the Criterion Collection. And it stars, who did I just say it starred a minute ago? James Caan. It's all these actors in my head. I want to thank Mando for joining us. Check out shopmando.com, shopmando.com. Get the starter pack. Use the code FOCUS, F-O-C-U-S, to get $5 off your order. I think you'll be very happy with their products. I'm very happy, and I'm hard to move the needle on when it comes to it's habit, personal grooming stuff, right? All right, before I let you all go, I like to say this, and Tim invented this. Well, I don't know if you invented it, Tim, but you used to do it on the satellite radio all the time. Don't text and drive. Arrive alive. We want you here for next week's show. So on that note, have a good one, and we'll see you next week here on The Focus Group.
It's The Focus Group with Tim Bennett and John Nash. Accessible on all platforms. Subscribe, like, and rate us on your platform of choice. Learn more at focusgroupradio.com.
That was a stunning Focus Group.